B-Pod Studios.
Yes! Hello, my broken brigade! Tis your great leader, Broken Matt Hardy! And you are currently listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with two wonderful blokes, James Stewart and Mike Riley. Yes! Let's get into it and listen to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast!
Mike Riley, we are here to recap All Elite Wrestling's Double or Nothing pay-per-view. It took place on Saturday night. I like this show. I like the show a lot, actually. But Mike, I want to start with your opening thoughts before we get to specific match thoughts.
Okay,
there's a lot to get through with this pay-per-view.
There is. And definitely, it's not the same Double or Nothing as last year, the AEW kickoff and so forth. But here we are a year later. We know the whole situation the country's in. For what they've had to work with, I was very impressed. And I, again, the whole factor of, we've talked about this week after week, with the fact that the crowd is out there, able to have that background noise, it almost felt like that there was like almost a full capacity crowd there with the crowd noise there. I know it was not filled to a near sellout or whatnot, but it had that feel, though, for that matter. Maybe because I knew it was a pay-per-view, and just in the back of my head that, you know, the other big pay-per-view was WrestleMania, where it was an empty arena and so forth. This one had a feel to a pay-per-view with a crowd, and that made a major difference here. I thought that the placement of matches were really good. The casino ladder match to open the pay-per-view, perfect spot for that. Darby Allin, oh my God, this kid, he's crazy. I mean, we'll go into detail of the matches, but I really like the placement of that. I like the John Moxley Brody Lee match. I love the Stadium Stampede match. Some quirky moments there too, but overall, very pleased. It was actually really pleased. I thought the most underrated and underappreciated match, I was really down on this one going into it, was the women's one of Nyla Rose and Sheeta. I thought that was a very underrated match. But overall, I gave this 4 stars out of 5, if we're going that route here. Some matches I could have gone without, but this was a good Double or Nothing pay-per-view. And from what AEW has done to capitalize during this pandemic, they've hit it out of the park, and they proved it again at Double or Nothing in 2020.
So, Mike, I like this show. I like this show a lot. But here was my biggest takeaway from the entire show. For a promotion that says that they don't want to be WWE, they do a lot of things like WWE. The AEW championship match is Dean Ambrose against Luke Harper, which, again, I like the match. And it wasn't a WWE match, and their characters are different. John Moxley is a totally different wrestler than Dean Ambrose was. And John Moxley also feels like he's having fun, by the way. But Mr. Brody Lee still looks like Luke, just looks and feels like Luke Harper, even though he's not. I still see a member of the Wyatt family, not a member of the Dark Order. And Chris Jericho, who I love, and I know you just got into 25 years into his career, who was the first AEW champion and should have been the first AEW champion, was a WWE guy for 20 years. And now Cody is the TNT champion, a belt he created, he put on himself, similar to Triple H. He was a WWE creation. And him making a title and putting it on himself is similar to Triple H getting the Raw World Heavyweight title back in circulation while Brock Lesnar goes to SmackDown during the initial brand split of the two companies. I mean, Cody might be the Jeff Jarrett of modern era pro wrestling. And the look of the belt is meh, and we'll get into more details about
that. Oh my God. Yeah.
Brian Cage won the AEW Money in the Bank. Oh, I'm sorry. It's called a casino ladder match. And we'll face Moxley at Fyter Fest, which will be on Bleacher Report Live for free. And Fyter Fest was originally supposed to be the AEW debut in London, England, but the pandemic prevented it. Overall, I did like the show, and we'll go deeper into matches of what I liked. But I had an issue getting past that. A lot of the top people on this roster are WWE guys.
Yeah, you know, I know you. The Brody Lee one, that one really sticks out. It's just because so recent. I mean, here he is. He's been in AEW 3 months, and now he's in the main event for a championship. That's a major push right there.
And Brian Cage, who is making his debut on the show,
right,
goes right into a world championship match.
Exactly. Wins it right there. The Jon Moxley thing, okay, now he's been around for a year, so I'll let that one slide a little bit. I know you mentioned Cody at WWE Creation. I don't really look at Cody as a WWE guy. Now, I just like, sure, he was Stardust, and I think he was kind of lost in that whole the whole atmosphere of WWE. He recreated himself in the independent circuit. He had a good run there, got some time in the Ring of Honor a little bit too and all that. He has reinvented himself. So I don't look at him specifically as a WWE guy. And like you said, with Jericho, where – yes, I wasn't big into him the first 25 years of his career, but I think what he's been able to do now has been awesome. Those are the guys, like, I look at the faces of AEW. You know, Cody, Jericho, boom. Moxley, borderline, Brody Lee, WWE. Even Ty Dillinger, okay? Sean Spears, he is Ty Dillinger to me. I don't care what people say. And Dustin Rhodes, listen, he's great, but he's still Goldust. So there's more to your argument there, WWE guys.
So with Cody, our first sight of Cody was the Hall of Fame all those years ago. He's up on stage inducting his dad into the Hall of Fame. And we're like, ooh, he can talk. Now if he can work, we might have something. And then he was dashing. And then Vince is like, GD pal, I see you as Stardust. And Cody disagreed and worked all those independent shows. We saw him versus Mike Bennett in Pittsfield.
Pittsfield, Mass. At the Wakanoa Park.
Yes. We watched him win the world championship at Ring of Honor at the Lowell Memorial Auditorium.
Great night.
So we were on the Cody Rhodes, the Cody tour, and you know we've had interactions with him, and he's been wonderful to deal with.
Saw him at Chaotic as well.
We saw him at Chaotic, absolutely. Yep. When him and Ilya Markopoulos went to a double disqualification or double count out or something. It was title for title. It was Ring of Honor title against Chaotic title. Yep. And there was no winner. And we knew that there would be no winner because, I mean, Cody's not going to.
No,
Cody couldn't create the Chaotic title, so he couldn't. Never mind.
Well, listen, if he created the TNT title, good for him. I love it. I mean, I think the belt sucks. I know they have a lot more to fix it up, but good for him creating a title. And if you're going to do it, own it, Cody. Friggin' own it, man. I have no issue with that.
So then he's the Million Dollar Man. Just the Million Dollar Man had a cooler belt.
yeah, he actually did.
So Cody was on the conference call, the pre-show conference call on Thursday, I think it was.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, this was a TNT creation. And I think Tony Khan has said that in the past, too. Mm-hmm. My intel tells me that Cody was pushing for a quote secondary title to everybody who would listen. And this is what they came up with because, see, Mike, we all have that boss who you present an idea to.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, I don't know. We'll see. And then 6 months down the road, or 3 months down the road, or 2 weeks down the road, your boss comes to you and goes, oh, I have this idea for you. What do you think about this? And you go, oh, I love it. That's a great idea. And in the back of your mind, or maybe if you're blunt like some people are, you say, oh, yeah, that was my idea 2 weeks ago, 3 months ago, 6 months ago. But the key that Cody did, and this is what can sometimes make a great employee to a great employer, is you make it think it's their idea from the outset.
Right.
Life lesson there, kids.
I like it. I like it. That's a
life lesson there, kids.
A freebie from Jay Stu for you.
Yeah. Been preaching life stuff a lot lately. So let's kind of dive into this. I'm going to start with my favorite match of the show.
Yeah.
Which was MJF against Jungle Boy.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It was an old school wrestling match. It had chain wrestling. It had the dirty villain MJF faking a knee injury. Turned turned his disadvantage into an advantage. Good near falls throughout. Jungle Boy hit a Frankensteiner on the apron, and MJF looked like he was legitimately dead on arrival. And here's something that the kids can learn at home, right, from watching this match.
Yeah.
So MJF's out. Jungle Boy can't beat him on the outside. So Jungle Boy, the good guy, won't accept a count-out win. So he's trying to get MJF back into the ring, which by the time MJF is back into the ring, he is recovered. Mm-hmm. And so then the match can progress. That is called protecting moves, protecting finishers, whatever. It gave MJF a chance to recover. And essentially they go through another sequence, series of cradles. MJF used a Euro clutch cradle for a three count. I loved this match. And of course, MJF then went to Twitter and wrote in lowercase and uppercase letters, quote, MJF is only good at promos. Blow me. I'm the total package. I'm the future. I'm better than you, and you effing know it. Tremendous, tremendous match. And my hope is that they are patient with MJF and they let him be the world champion a year from now. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to see it. I want to see him and Moxley at the next pay-per-view, but I don't want to see him and Moxley at the next pay-per-view because it might be too soon. But MJF, slow build, man, slow build. Mike Riley, what'd you think?
Yeah, that was my second favorite match of the night. Again, like you said, just a real traditional match, back and forth. I like also, too, Aubrey Edwards got pushed to the ropes to get Jungle Boy down there. That helped MJF tremendously right there. Back and forth pinfall attempts. And, you know, it was very exciting, too. Had me on the edge of my seat where there was a super kick at one point to Jungle Boy and a non-fall there. Really close back and forth. I thought that was over. But, again, Jungle Boy made this match very exciting. He's a good wrestler. Jungle Boy is really a good wrestler. This is a good spot for him. And I know you talk about MJF to be, you know, future champion and so forth. That was a good step for Jungle Boy right there, too. I will say this, though, that I think after the MJF win, and sure, he's the best heel in professional wrestling right now. We all agree. He's awesome on the microphone, great, everything all around. But I think if you're looking at this, the right thing would be to have him challenge Cody right away for the TNT championship. Wouldn't you think so? I mean, that's the...
Oh, I'm sure Cody's pushing for that so he can get his win back.
Exactly. And then somehow find a way to get to the AEW championship at some point. But I think that's the right call here. But this was a damn good, easy match, good storytelling, good place on the card. I liked it a lot, though.
So here's what Jungle Boy has. And I agree with you. Jungle Boy at some point will be a world champion, I think, in AEW. I think he will be.
Yeah.
He's got the Kerry Von Erich, Shawn Michaels. He's got that great look that's going to appeal to the female demographic.
Yep.
And that is extra money, my friend.
Yep.
That is extra money. Learn to kiss. That is Lance. That is, hopefully he will be the anti-Lance Storm and Chris Jericho, where they were the thrill seekers in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. They didn't want to kiss the ugly girls. They didn't want to kiss the pretty girls. They didn't want to kiss any of the girls, but they were promoted as the kiss stealers.
Right.
You know, the thrill seekers.
And it worked.
So Jungle Boy just has all of that. He's got the look. He's got the athletic ability. And he's in a group, too, with Luchasaurus and Marco Stunt.
Right.
And so there's an ability to protect him on a week-to-week basis, and then he breaks out of the group when he's ready to go.
And you know what? This match was just announced, what, 2 weeks ago? So there wasn't a lot of big storytelling on it. It was put together rather quickly, not a lot of storytelling, but the way they executed it, the way it came out, great, really good stuff. Easy. Easy match, and it was good.
Mike, what was your favorite match of the night?
I actually liked, my personal favorite was the John Moxley Brody Lee match. Yeah, I really thought it was.
This would be the WWE Intercontinental Championship match.
Yeah, sure. That sounds right. So it just kind of had that real big match feel with the security and, you know, Brody Lee coming out with the championship that he didn't earn. He stole. And that's good storytelling right there.
Possession is 9/10 of the law, Mike.
Yeah, exactly. But it is what it is. And again, back and forth. Now, the finish, a lot of people had a problem with the finish here. Again, Brody Lee got he was all bloodied up there after that suplex there as he went
the double arm DDT through the ramp, which was a spectacular spot.
Unbelievable. And then the paradigm shift twice by Moxley to Brody Lee. Really good stuff there. Poker chip went right into Lee's face. So they would use this poker chip all night. That was really good stuff. I don't know. Did the referee forget that there was a count out? Because they felt like they were out of the ring for more than about 10 seconds at some point.
They relaxed the rules, and they probably should have acknowledged that. But this is the old ECW.
Yeah.
At least AEW has a little bit of an ECW feel, is that they're very laxed with the rules and that they're not going to DQ or count out somebody unless it's really egregious.
Yeah.
And I think this was kind of a
good,
this is an example of this.
Yeah. Cause the WWE could take a page out of their book at Hell in a Cell in October, 2019, if you know what I'm talking about there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, the finish, I think some people had a problem with it. I thought it was good. It was effective. The choke, at the end there. And you know what? I thought it was easy and simple. I'm sure there was something. Hey, take it home. Let's go. Bring it home. He's hurt. That's it. But it was an effective finish to me, and I like the placement here of Jon Moxley being able to have possession of his championship title again. You could have a grudge match between these two very easy. Brody Lee, he has really done a nice job to jump into the game this, you know, 2 months in and be in that main event picture right away. That's really good. But I really enjoyed this match. It was a good traditional match for me, I thought. Good placement. These two know each other, and I really enjoyed that.
So Moxley hits the double arm DDT through the ramp. All the agents and the referees come out to the stage. Moxley comes out of the hole first. Lee climbs out of the hole, bleeding from the head. Moxley hits a DDT, pendulum shift DDT. Lee kicks out at one. Yep. Moxley hits a second one, kicks out at two. And then Moxley uses a rear naked choke, and Lee passed out in the choke, and the referee called for the bell, and they made it very clear on commentary that this was a ref stoppage.
Yes.
So if they want to continue the story, they have an out. It was a ref stoppage, not a clean pin or a tap out. So I have a little bit of an issue with this finish.
Okay.
And the issue isn't the fact that Moxley won the match. No issue with him winning the match. And I appreciate the relaxed rules. It's why I loved ECW. Mm-hmm. But the choke finish I didn't love, because if it's a different style of choke, like if it's Andre the Giant choking out Hulk Hogan with two hands around a throat,
yep,
does that get a five count and then a disqualification?
Yeah, that's a good
question.
So in
ECW, the Taz Mission was a judo choke. And the announcers, Joey Styles, always made it clear that the Taz Mission, the judo choke, the kata hajimane, was a legal hold in ECW. And it was never actually, or it was very rarely called an actual choke, so that you're conditioned that that hold that Taz does is okay. So it's a nitpick on my behalf. But so does this mean that chokes are legal, or is it a rare naked choke, or should it have been a sleeper hold? Because, of course, when Taz debuted in WWE and he wins over Kurt Angle, there was the, is this a choke or a sleeper thing?
Right.
But it's clearly called on commentary. Moxley is using a rear naked choke to win the match. So choke holds are legal, or is it just that choke is legal? It's just, it's a little nitpick detail. Overall, I enjoyed the brawl. I liked the match, but that finish, it needs to be a little bit cleaner to understand that chokes are legal. This is legal.
Well, to your point, talking about the officials kind of letting things go. Maybe this is a thing they're letting go. So they're not going too much into, you know, letting that affect the match so much. If it's going to be that way, if they're not going to do countouts, then we'll let this be legal as well. I had no issue with it. I thought it was an effective finish the way he did it. You know, Brody Lee's definitely got a little more size on Jon Moxley, that's for certain. And the way he did, he sold it very well too, I thought, the finish. So I thought it was a good way to close it out there, considering the fact that he was all bloodied up, you know. So I think that was a good way to cap it off. No issue with it.
So Brian Cage won the casino ladder match, the AEW version of Money in the Bank. He'll be earning a AEW World Championship match at AEW Fighter Fest against Jon Moxley. Yes, you're pointing at
Did you like the 2 minutes in between? New entrant?
Oh, the intervals in the casino match?
Yeah,
it was fine.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cool.
So I'll get to that in a second, right?
Okay,
so,
yeah. Okay.
Brian Cage wins his debut match. He's already got a world title shot. Overall, I thought the match had good excitement, scary moves, some botches, but good. I'm not a big Brian Cage fan, and I know he's a former Impact Wrestling World Champion. Again, he has a WWE look to him that I've just kind of grown to dislike. Mm-hmm. And I know Cage is talented. I know this. But his look reminds me of Brakus. And if you're not familiar with Brakus, Google him. Yeah. He used to be in ECW, and he was in WWF. I think his last WWF match was like the Brawl for All. But this is probably why it popped in my head. But Cage is going to be another monster for Jon Moxley to beat, I assume. So here's my issue with the intervals, right? So the rules were two men start off, a new competitor introduced every 2 minutes. The match could be won at any time, which I like.
Yep.
So Scorpio Sky and Frankie Kazarian, who are tag team partners, were the first two competitors. So logically, wouldn't they have done something so that one of them could win the match within the first 2 minutes? And then, like, they're partners, right? So one of them wins the match, and then they can challenge each other later on for that. Like, you can work around that. I just thought, like, it's very different than Axe and Smash, who are the WWF Tag Team Champions, starting the 1989 Royal Rumble. Like, they've got to go the distance to make it to the end and win the thing. Scorpio Sky and Frankie Kazarian could have won it in 90 seconds. One of them could have.
Yeah.
And they were long playing because it's the match, and you're not going to blow your first casino ladder match when you're debuting a new concept in 2 minutes. You're going to let the match play out. But they were building for a match instead of going to win the match and then figure it out. Just a nitpick. And by the way, I think Darby Allin should have won.
Yeah.
And he did some insane stuff.
Oh.
And was just tossed around the ring at an insane pace.
Yep.
You know, Orange Cassidy is funny to us, but he needs a crowd to play off.
Yeah.
Him coming out and asking the commentators the rules of the match was funny.
Yeah.
He was trying to figure out how to set up the ladder and reach the reach the poker chip without the ladder.
Yep.
It was funny. I didn't love the finish. Was okay. I think had Darby Allin not fallen off the ladder at first, it would have been better. But did you need to throw Darby Allin outside the ring unprotected on a ladder?
Yeah.
Like, did you need to do that?
Right.
I did like Cage having Taz as a mouthpiece. And Taz said, you know, Cage is going to continue to drop bodies.
Yeah.
So, Mike, what'd you think about it?
Yeah, just kind of chaotic. I mean, you had eight guys there all at once at one point. But, yeah, the entrance thing every 2 minutes, you're right. That's where I had a little issue with that, too. Like, this could be over right now. But they're trying to tie into a Royal Rumble with a ladder match, and a little too much there. Just put them all in the ring at once. Do it all at once there, because that very easily could have been over. Brian Cage's debut, I thought, it kind of had a feel. Remember when Kane was debuted at the Hell in the Cell? That's got to be Kane ripping the cage. Same feel right there when he came out. I thought it was entertaining, though, like you said. Darby Allin, again, the highlight of that. Everyone's going to be talking about him climbing that ladder with the skateboard and a very nasty-looking spot at the end there. And you know what? I was actually maybe the most underappreciated I think of that match was Luchasaurus, underrated. He had a really good showdown and destroyed Allen with a drill claw when he put him on the outside. That was, again, you know, effective, but I think this is a good step in the right direction for him to be in a spot like this in a casino ladder match with the title shot there. He didn't win, we know that, but I think he had a really good spot there as well there because Allen was the star of that show, the star of that match. So you have him right there and have Luchasaurus slim like that. That's a good spot for Luchasaurus going further along the storyline here.
Yeah, and I enjoyed the match. Didn't like the finish.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are the things that stood out. So it will be Cage and Moxley at Fyter Fest.
Yep.
Whenever and wherever that will be.
Yeah, now Fyter Fest is supposed to be June-ish and then the – or no, July.
Yeah, usually. It'll probably be July. It'll probably be somewhere in July. It was supposed to be – Tony Khan said it was supposed to be somewhere in London, but pandemic.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I think it's too soon. I'd rather – but, you know, Brody Lee was a little quick.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just kind of what it is, right? That's how they're choosing to book this thing. Double J Jeff Jarrett won the TNT champ. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, Cody beat Lance Archer for the Cody created TNT championship. This was really the Cody Invitational tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice. Cody wanted to hang with Mike Tyson, so he invited him to present him with the title, who, by the way, was caught on camera yawning during this match.
Yeah.
Mike, what'd you think of the belt?
The belt sucks. It's like a bunch of recycled Diet Pepsi cans with a red poster background you can get at CVS or something. I'll actually take the WWE Universal red title over this. That's how much I hated it. But thankfully, the commentary team did note many times that the title is not complete. They have to, you know, spice it up a little. So that's some good news there. I do appreciate the concept of it, but not a fan of it right now, Jimmy. It needs a lot of work.
Do you like how the Turner Mansion is on the belt?
It's touche. It definitely makes sense. So I'll buy it. Yeah, sure. But
does this mean that Cody shares Ted Turner's view of depopulizing the world? Or I don't
sure.
know.
Sure, I'd say so. Do you like the belt?
Bill Gates does. Oh no, I think it's hideous.
Yeah, they need a lot more work done to it. A lot more work.
I think it's funny because Cody made fun of Mick Foley having to go out and debut the 24/7 title.
Yep.
And he ripped how lazy the belt looked. This looked lazy, but they put work and thought into this.
Yeah.
And that's the difference.
Right, right.
The WWE ordered a 24/7 belt and got it in like 3 days. They put time and thought and money into this. And that's the difference. And the crime is that AEW heavyweight title is a thing of beauty.
Oh,
the
it's unbelievable.
The tag team titles look great.
Yep.
The women's championship looks great. And then you process this piece of garbage.
You like the women's title? You like it?
I think it's the same as the men's, except it's more fitting for a woman.
It's very
and when I say fitting for a woman, it's a smaller plate, smaller strap, because the women are generally smaller than the men.
Right. Yeah. Maybe just because from seeing the WWE version of it over the last few years, it feels really small. It almost reminds me of like a Lunger Blaze WWF title back in the 90s, that same design sort of deal.
And but so you know, because you've got a men's and a women's, and I've got a men's and a women's WWE, there's a slight variance that you really have to look at to pick up on.
There
yeah.
you go. It's a little, it's definitely smaller. No hiding behind it. That TNT one, oh my God. They need a lot of work done there. It does not look good. Can I talk about Mike Tyson real quick?
Sure.
I was really disappointed with Mike Tyson in this. I mean, this was the I know he's going to be on Dynamite this week, but and that's some good news there. We're going to get more of Tyson, but it just really felt like it was he got paid. He just got paid to be there, which of course he did, but he did nothing. He just sat there. He either laughed. He was looking around. He yawned at one point. Yeah, exactly. It was a really, really bad for Mike Tyson here. Maybe I'm used to him or expecting him to get involved like he did at WrestleMania 14, go in there for the three count or have a storyline like he did with DX. You had a week and a half to build him up here. And just the fact he's sitting out there, I know he did chase off Jake Roberts with the snake and all that, but I just was not impressed with the Mike Tyson spot here. Could have been better. Took his shirt off. Of course, he's trying to build himself back out to get to that another fight there. But again, very lazy. The lazy stuff here by Mike Tyson.
So what bothered me about the Tyson aspect was Arn and Jake both promoted the fact that Tyson is going to be running around the ring. That might be a direct quote. Yep. If not, it's a paraphrase. So when we didn't get Mike Tyson running around the ring, we get him sitting there with the title until the end when he's chasing off Jake Roberts and pulling his shirt off.
Yep.
That's the disappointment, because we expected somebody to eat a right hand in the same way that, you know, Chris Jericho also, right. which if you want me to play a conspiracy theorist, Mike Tyson's going to have a match in AEW.
That'd be awesome.
I wouldn't be shocked if it's Chris Jericho.
That'd be great. I'd have no issue with that.
And that's something that's a bigger program. That's a celebrity program that can keep Jericho out of the world title picture for a little bit.
Yep. No, that'd be great. And that's a draw too. You know, it's going to generate ratings, and that's what it's all about here.
That might be one they save until they can get back to fans.
Yeah, I'd hope so, because the fans deserve that one. And I'm sure Tyson will want more of a payday too. Right?
Yeah, of course. We're all in it for a good payday. As you get older, the more you value the payday. So specifically about this match, Cody really needs a crowd. He really needs crowd participation. I felt this match had a really slow pace, although I did like that Archer, billed as a monster, hit the blackout right away. And Cody, of course, was smart enough to roll to the outside, so it made sense. The finish, I didn't really love. Cody spamming the crossroads, Tyson throwing out Jake Roberts, who tried to come back with a snake. This was a very blah match to me. And again, like, Cody's had some really good pay-per-view matches. Dustin last year, the Jericho match was really good. So Cody's had some good matches, but he also had the Sean Spears match, which was carried by Tully Blanchard. And then he had this one. The MJF one, I don't remember clearly enough, but I feel like I was critical of it because it shouldn't have been as – it should have been more about Cody getting revenge than showcasing what MJF can do. That's how I remember it, very generically, but I don't think I like that one either. So not exactly. Cody creates an ugly championship. Cody has a stinker of a match, and Cody buries the monster and Lance Archer in the Cody Invitational Tournament. Mike, your thoughts on the match?
Cody Invitational. I thought Lance Archer needed this match more than Cody. I mean, I think he needed the title more than him. For storyline purposes, I understand Cody winning, and I'm not surprised, but I thought it should have been Archer. The match didn't do much for me. I don't think it was a real appealing one when you look back at it, as you just mentioned a lot of things I think we're both in agreement on. You know, there were some spots here where it was starting to get exciting, where Cody just couldn't get anything done. He had the he had a DDT in front of Jake, which really got him pissed, because, you know, Jake Roberts looks at the DDT as a finisher, not a transitional move. And that's what I think he saw there. And then also, he tried to do the gold dust finish. He tried to do the stinger splash. Couldn't win. Couldn't do it. That's where I thought it started to get a little exciting. But then after that, it just didn't do much for me there. Lance Archer, too, just looking into the camera over and over, he didn't sell me. Good thing he's got Jake Roberts. That's probably the best thing going for him right now. Because if he didn't, I don't know. I think Lance Archer needs a lot more work done, and Jake Roberts might be the best thing for him moving forward here. It's been a good storytelling for him, but this match just didn't cut it for me. Not impressed.
So Jake Roberts, give me 2 hours a week of Jake Roberts. I think everything.
Oh my God.
He's been great. And I feel guilty because I missed his promo where he essentially told Brandy to go to hell and go to the kitchen. And
did you see it with Arn Anderson this past week?
Yeah, I saw it with Arn Anderson this week.
I like that.
It was the one 2 weeks ago, and that was good. That was good, like 2020 villain stuff.
Right.
You know, there are broadcasters who have gotten in trouble for telling women to go to the kitchen, but Jake Roberts is a villain. He's a villain here. That's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to get you to hate. So, like, that promo is a good, like, 1980s villain promo, and that's why I appreciated it.
Yeah.
So, like, give me 2 hours of Jake Roberts just talking trash to people.
Oh, it's awesome.
I was kind of surprised that there was no Brandy here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird dynamic because Brandy came out during Dustin's match.
Right.
But had some revenge stakes and on the pre-show had said, oh, I'm not going to be there as a distraction to Cody.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, there's a weird, like, there are either small seeds being set here for some sort of Cody, Brandy, Dustin thing, or they're logic holes in the story. I don't think that when Tony Khan gets his final approval on stories, I don't think he leaves out those details. Mm-hmm. So there's something longer term here, I think. And Cody, to his credit, always has some type of story going for him. That's the key to being, you know, one of the vice presidents of the company, is that you make sure that you set yourself up for the next program.
Yeah. And Brandy, you know, without her being out there, and again, you just always have in the back of your mind with Arn Anderson that he's going to turn at some point.
Never trust an Anderson, Mike Riley. Never trust one.
I know you've said that many times there before, and it just, without her out there, it just always had in the back of your mind, it's going to happen right there. And yeah, it didn't happen yet, but it very easily could. So a lot of directions can go there for Cody. It can be the face or the heel, and it works great for him.
So the other match that I want to talk about that I really liked was the Stadium Stampede main event.
A lot of notes.
Elite defeated the Inner Circle. Kenny Omega and Matt Hardy appeared with a golf cart and chased Sammy Guevara into the stands after Sammy Guevara thought he won the match. It set up the finish. Guevara hit Omega and Hardy with boots to the face. Neo One drone appeared to distract Guevara. And then Kenny Omega hit a one-wing angel out of the stands through a platform onto the field and pinned Sammy Guevara. And Aubrey Edwards had a great moment where she runs, grabs the ladder, climbs up the ladder to get onto the platform, looks in it, and then counts the fall.
Yeah.
So, Mike, of all the cinematic matches that we have seen, these are pre-produced because supposedly this was put together the night before. It was put together Friday night before the Saturday night pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
This one's my favorite.
Really?
This one was my favorite.
Okay.
Just all the details that went into it. It didn't feel like it was overproduced. It didn't feel like it was being produced as a movie, even though it was being produced like it. It felt closer to a wrestling match than a movie. So what was your thoughts on this?
So just on your point there, closer to a wrestling match than a movie, there I semi agree with you. There were a couple moments where you had a very quick replay, like a second after, and it's like, okay, that is just edited. So you know this was pre-taped. And what I really noticed it too was when Matt Hardy, he went into the pool, his face is in there and you're looking at him, he's smiling at you. It's like, again, pre-produced movie aspect there. So that's where I'm like, this isn't. But what really pissed me off on this, and maybe it's me being a traditional wrestling fan, and I fully admit that, with wrestling rules and everything, sure, it's in a football stadium, I hated the fact how Chris Jericho made a challenge and he had the review. And
I love that.
No, I was out on that. Out. I hated that. Now, I thought it was, you know, I appreciate the concept of it, but this is wrestling. In short, Tony Khan, you can flex your arm to say, hey, I'm the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and Vince McMahon, I have a more successful franchise than you've had in two shots at a league, and now you're striking out there, so I can do what I want. But No. This is wrestling. We don't incorporate a challenge. We don't incorporate a flag. It just doesn't happen. It's 1, 2, 3. It's a count out. Sure, I love how the referees all had the IBF to communicate whoever had the 1, 2, 3 around the stadium. That's fine. But as far as the football stuff, no. Out on that. No. This is a wrestling event, not a football game. And I love football, but it's not that, though. I'm sorry. I had an issue with that.
So why I liked it is because wrestling replays happen every once in a blue moon where another referee will come out and, you know, do this, this, and this. And in the context of it's a stadium match, it's on a football field. So like the Inner Circle came out in football pads and football gears, and both teams got introduced like football teams get introduced on a week to week basis.
And Justin Roberts' introduction sucked. Go ahead.
Well, Justin Roberts sucks anyway.
Oh, from the top rope, Chase Stu.
Never mind.
I know why. I want you to expose it. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, there's an incident with Justin Roberts and somebody who was spoken for in the context of Twitter DMs. Mm-hmm. He didn't take the hint that this person was spoken for, and he kept persisting. That's why I don't like Justin Roberts.
Same here. I heard that too.
I read his book, and I have no interest in Justin Roberts ever.
So if it was a football field, that intro sucked.
But Justin Roberts sucks anyway.
Yeah.
For those reasons, I don't like his ring announcing either.
Same here.
Never liked his ring announcing.
Never.
I thought Tony Chimmel was better. Was Tony way Chimmel. Better.
Very good. Very good.
Anywho.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. Hmm. So Jericho hits Nick Jackson with Floyd, the baseball bat, for a two count. Yep. Jericho didn't like the call, said he was challenging the play. Ugh. Aubrey Edwards went to the replay tent. Jericho followed her in. They're still arguing. Aubrey comes out of the tent and says the call stands. Why I liked it was because it was a play on a wrestler complaining about a bad pinfall count. A wrestler actually challenging it within the context of the match that is at hand, and because they've used replay in wrestling before, so it's not like it's this weird thing. It's just it's turning up the volume on the situation and what it is. And I laughed when the challenge flag came out.
Okay,
and I laughed when they went to the tent. And I laughed when Jericho called Aubrey a crappy referee. He obviously used the S-bomb.
Yeah.
And part of it, too, is, as I said a little bit earlier, Aubrey Edwards might be my favorite referee in the business.
She's good.
Reminds me of she's married, been married for 15 years. She is a computer science major. And she also was in she also had hands in creating video games.
Nice.
Smart. So she's wicked smart too. Mm. But Aubrey Edwards might be my favorite wrestling official because she's animated, she's active. She reminds me a lot of Tommy Young.
Mm-hmm.
There are small details that if you watch her work in the ring, it makes it feel more like an athletic contest. We always talk about Jim Ross and his emotion and his passion.
Yep.
And you can see Aubrey getting involved in the matchup. And it's something that I caught on to when she was reffing the Chris Jericho Hangman Page match for the AEW Championship back in Chicago last year. Because I'm like, I don't know who Aubrey Edwards is.
Right.
I feel like I should know who she is. But her being involved in the match adds to the match. There's no place where I felt like her being active has been in the way of a match.
I hear you. And I get what you're saying with the challenge of, you know, she was very, animated. You're challenging, you know, and it's like, if you tell me that this match ahead of time, you're able to challenge, the referees are able to throw penalty flags, fine. I have no issue with that. But going into that match as a fan, thinking it was strictly wrestling, that's where I didn't like the football stuff. So that's just my opinion on that. I didn't like it. I thought it was corny. Overall, the match I thought was very well done. It was hilarious. a lot of dangerous spots, though, James. I think you'll agree here with this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Matt Jackson jumping off the goalpost, for the backflip off the goalpost. Holy cow, unstable. The concourse of the Jackson's jumping off onto Chris Jericho.
He ran down the entire lower bowl of the stadium to get the momentum, leaped the barricade, and then dove onto Jericho on a table. One little detail is I liked how Jericho was trying to fight off, and the other young buck just kept beating on him to, you know, actually be like, okay, he's ready.
Yep.
But it's like those small little details, because sometimes Jericho could be laying there forever. And
what about Jake Hager taking all those bottles of bubbly?
Yep.
Oh, my.
That's because he's tough.
That was insane. I couldn't believe that. I thought it was a really cool spot, too, with Kenny pouring Hager the whiskey after, and then Hager – or not Hager.
Kenny Omega.
Yeah, Kenny
Omega.
Kenny
Omega. And
Paige,
Daniels. It was Jack Daniels with milk.
And then the bottle – yeah, the milk there is awesome. So I thought that was funny. But Hager, though, holy cow, taking the glass to him. This match to me, though, the most important ones were Jericho and the Young Bucks. Because what the Young Bucks did in the tough spots there, the very dangerous spots, like I said, the goalpost, the concourse, and then also the 100-yard suplex. And I'm sure it was not 100 yards, but the fact they told it there in the football field, that was really good stuff. Those were the highlights for me. Matt Hardy was really great, too, with his characters. You know, the vintage Matt Hardy, the version one, and then we get the regular Matt Hardy. It was awesome stuff there. So good, creative stuff. Well done. Really funny stuff. And you know what? If this were – this is fine right now, but if this were with the crowd, no. No, this is fine without the crowd, and if that's going to be the case for a while, give me more of this. No issue with that.
So they may be – you know, depending on where we are in the world, they might do one of these every year.
Do it. If we don't have a crowd, I have no issue with that.
But just to – I liked the matter of fact, the Matt Hardy fact. They altered it differently. I laughed at that. I liked the replay thing that Jericho did. I liked that Matt Jackson finished his suplex series in the end zone, did the Alex Wright touchdown dance,
yep,
and was penalized for it. And I liked Shivani and Jim Ross being like, the Alex Wright dance is terrible, which is a throwback to their WCW days, because Das Wunderkind, right. Alex Wright was just, he was terrible.
He was a bust. Cast,
yeah. A whole bunch of things.
And how about the horse?
Oh yeah, Adam Page's horse was tremendous.
Awesome.
He's riding it through the tunnels looking for Sammy Guevara. You know, the stadium bar stuff was good. Good for Sammy for taking the one-winged angel from the top of the entryway where the football players come out onto what was obviously a gimmicked platform.
Right.
But that takes a lot of trust and a lot of balls, really.
Absolutely.
To one, be okay with that. And it's a lot of trust in Kenny Omega. And just that was one of the better finishes to a match. And it was good to see, even though I wanted Jericho to pin Kenny Omega, that was a statement win for the Elite. And it was a good way to debut this match, and it was a good way to be like, yup, Nick, Matt Hardy, Kenny Omega, and Hangman Page, yup, they got something here. They got something here. The Matt Jackson, Kenny Omega Gatorade bath was tremendous.
Yep.
And I like how the Elite all posed on the field, fireworks going off, close the show. Yep. Thanks for coming.
Exactly. And just a couple of other details through the cheerleaders, everything that they had in a football field, the sprinkler on Matt Jackson's face. That was cool.
On Sammy's face, Sammy Guevara's
face. Sammy Guevara's face. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Excuse me. And then
that's what woke him up. And then he thought he won the match.
Right. Right. And then Jericho took the chalk as he was lying down.
Adam Page brought out the line marker of chalk and drove it over Chris Jericho's face.
Yep. And the mascot, the Jaguars mascot. every little detail you think about, you may not think about in football going into a, you know, preparing the field maintenance wise and so forth, pretty much brought out there, and golf carts and all that stuff. And then, you know, stuff that you see on the field for the promotional purposes, cheerleader and the mascot, it was all right there. They put everything out there, some good stuff. And we got a nice tour of the home of Super Bowl 39, where the Patriots beat the Philadelphia Eagles.
So the other note that I have from the pay-per-view is AEW's All Out is set for Saturday, September 5th. Location wasn't included in the announcement, but it's going to be Labor Day weekend. Last year was at the Sears Center in Illinois. After that show last year in Illinois, Tony Khan had mentioned that he had hoped that the Sears Center would host the event every year, but we're in the midst of a pandemic and Illinois is a pretty hard hit state. So we will see if that holds it. I tend to think that both wrestling companies are in Florida until further notice. And that also relates to SummerSlam being in Boston, which, you know, we've been down on for a while because Marty Walsh and Governor Baker are team lockdown. Yeah. So that's where we're at there.
Might be dead on the water, unfortunately. I just want one more thing on the, sure. The Double or Nothing. Very heavy babyface results. Very heavy babyface results here for this one. And you know what? If that's the direction they're going with right now to set up new storylines, that's fine. But, you know, obviously MJF winning, that was a big heel right there. Everything else, though, very pleased with the way this show was and the way they did it all. The empty stadium arena match was, again, we just talked about that, how they utilized everything to their advantage. And, you know, doing the whole movie aspect thing, similar to what WWE has done, they did a nice job, AEW. So good job putting together this show here in front of no crowd.
Yeah, I like the show a lot. I like the show a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's just those little details about kind of being WWE light, and you know, I'm just nitpicking because I don't want to be too AEW honkish.
Yeah. So
I'm being a little nitpicky, but that's what it is. Do you want to do Riley round or match of the week next?
Let's go with a Riley round. You ready?
All right, let's go Riley round.
All right, so this past weekend was the 21-year anniversary, Owen Hart passing away. You know what? Let me go to the Owen Hart question after, because I want to go to this one. While we're still in AEW, let me just ask you real quick. That was their first pay-per-view of the pandemic here during the pandemic. WWE has had two since then. So, James, what do you think has been the best pay-per-view during the pandemic? Please be specific, too, if you know what I mean.
I think WrestleMania Night 1.
Yeah.
I think WrestleMania Night 1 was the better, was the best of the bunch. And I liked AEW's last night. The crowd, you know, they had a friends and family section. They had wrestlers around the ringside. All that stuff gave it a better feel. But I think I liked WrestleMania Night 1 better.
Yeah, same here.
But not by much.
This is very close. This is a really close one, the Double or Nothing. I may have to watch it again to change my opinion, but that night one was really good stuff. The Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, ladder match, the Boneyard match, it stole the show for me, I thought, the whole weekend. That was really good stuff. So this is good, though, Double or Nothing. All right, Owen Hart, 21-year anniversary, passed away this weekend. Still can't believe it. Did you see the Dark Side of the Ring on Owen Hart?
I did.
Okay. So I'm sure the whole perspective from a lot of things is about Martha Hart, how she is perceived as allowing Owen into the Hall of Fame. James, after seeing the Owen Hart Dark Side of the Ring, does your perspective on Martha Hart change? And would you like to see, after hearing her, do you still want to see Owen into the Hall of Fame? And will we see him in the Hall of Fame on this?
So specifically the WWE Hall of Fame,
yeah,
because there are other wrestling Hall of Fames,
WWE, sorry,
which I think Martha would accept entrance into. But as far as the WWE Hall of Fame goes, if the family doesn't want it, the family should say no.
Yep.
And it's simple enough. And to a degree, I understand her point that she doesn't want the WWE making money off of the death of her husband. I totally get that. I totally understand that. I appreciate that. But it's her call. So if she says no, then they don't do it. And it's as simple as that. So I'm on board with that decision. There are other wrestling Hall of Fames that, you know, work just fine.
You know, and there's two sides to every story. Never really heard her whole story here before this. I heard her on Jericho's podcast last week, which was really good stuff too. But, you know, not hearing it, just other stuff like, come on, let him in, give it to the fans and all that. But if she doesn't want that, now I'm on her side. I have no issue with that. This is a family decision at this point. And watch the documentary if you haven't, folks, because, man, that carabiner holding up Owen Hart, like seeing her hold it there.
It's sickening.
It's haunting. It really is. Yeah. And that really should have been a crime scene. Really should have been when you think about it. And finally, if you could see Owen Hart fight someone currently today in professional wrestling, who would you like to see him fight? We're talking Owen in his prime too, of course, before all this.
AJ Styles?
Yeah, you know what? I would say that and also Chris Jericho.
Kenny Omega.
Omega would be good. Kevin Owens.
Kevin Owens would be fabulous.
He loves Owen Hart. He named himself because of that. So
named his son Owen.
There you go. Those are all my stuff right there for Owen Hart. So 21 years, James. Ugh.
So on that, our match of the week, you picked an Owen Hart match. I picked an Owen Hart match, which we didn't know about until we logged in and was like, oh, what's your match of the week? So my match of the week is Owen Hart. So let's put the preference out there.
Yeah.
We can all agree that Owen's two best matches are Bret Hart at WrestleMania 10 and the 10-man tag from In Your House Canadian Stampede.
Oh, absolutely. 97.
Yep.
Yep.
A personal favorite of mine is Blue Blazer versus Mr. Perfect at WrestleMania 5.
Sure.
My match of the week aired on Monday Night Raw on March 3rd, 1997. It's the finals of the European Championship Tournament. It's Owen Hart against the British Bulldog from Germany. This match goes about 22 minutes. Jim Ross on commentary notes that as tag team champions, which Owen and Bulldog were at the time, they wrestled zero tag team matches on this tour. There are issues within the team that Vince and JR and Honky Tonk Man put over during the match. The match itself had a great flow. The chemistry was great. The near falls were great. Davey Boy won the European Championship over Owen. There's a case to be made that maybe this is one of the better matches in Raw history up to this point in time. So that is my match of the week. It's Owen Hart versus the British Bulldog from Germany for the first European Championship.
Good pick. Very good pick. And, you know, right at the pretty much the beginning of that Attitude Era, almost with WrestleMania 13, a month after that. And, you know, before this is the end of Bret Hart in WWF right there with the Hart Foundation as they were getting to unify there into SummerSlam 97 and into the Survivor Series, of course. That was a good time there for Owen Hart and Davey Boy Smith, for that matter. Mine was the King of the Ring 1994. And if you remember back at the Survivor Series 93, that's when Owen turned heel on his family. He really became that bad guy and so forth. And coming off that match against Bret Hart, who we beat at WrestleMania 10, one of the best WrestleMania matches of all time, as we talk about. But, you know, it was a quick match here in the semifinals with the 1-2-3 Kid, a drop kick right to the Kid in the semifinal as he came right into the ring. Owen ended up winning via sharpshooter here to get to the finals. And the only reason I'm picking this here, I mean, it wasn't a great – you don't really think of it as one of the best matches of all time, but he did beat Razor Ramon in the finals. But what you have to look here is that Jim the Anvil Neidhart comes out to interfere and help out Owen Hart in the end and, you know, eventually goes to his side. And just Owen's promo, oh, my God, 1994, demanding he be respected as a king, to be called the King of Hearts. We know where it took him there on the coronation. Like Owen on the microphone, really appreciate him now, obviously, more and more that he's gone. It's just easier to say that. But you don't know what you have until it's gone. That's how it's all said and done. And Owen was so special. And hearing everyone's stories about him, some good stuff. No one had a bad word to say about Owen Hart. So good way to look back in his memory this weekend here. King of Hearts, Owen Hart, King of the Ring, 1994 semifinal and the final match.
Yeah, Owen's work was great. Owen's work was great. And
awesome.
Something that Jericho says at the end of Dark Side of the Ring, and he also says on his podcast with Martha, is if Owen had gotten to where the Radicals had stayed in WWE, had lived to be in WWE until the Radicals of Benoit, Malenko, Guerrero, and Saturn got there. Mm-hmm. Kurt Angle was there at the time. Taz came in at the time a little bit. Like, there's a whole new set of opponents for Owen Hart.
And Owen would have been like that perfect fit on the SmackDown team too. Yep. You know, that would have been just so sad thinking more and more about it.
Yeah, and I hate closing on a sad note, but Hannah Kimura, who is an international female wrestler, she passed away this weekend. And it's a reminder that we all need to be better to each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's one thing about being a jerk on a talk show or a TV show or for entertainment purposes, really. Don't be a jerk to somebody in real life.
Yeah.
Like, don't bully somebody, because we all are going through different things in our life. Some people know what they are. Some people don't. It's that personal. It's that person's individual. It's that person who decides whether they want to share that with the world or share that with somebody publicly or privately. But long story short, wrestlers are people.
Yep.
We're all people. We all have the same basic human emotions, and we all hurt in similar ways. And whatever we're dealing with, you might not know about. I might not know about something that you're dealing with, but don't just be better. Just be better, especially when the world is a weird place right now, where we're all in different stages of being isolated, locked down, not locked down, doing things that make us uncomfortable. We're all dealing with something personally, new challenges every day. And so this is my PSA to be better to people. Be better. And there's a difference between the talk show where we're talking about wrestling and, you know, you and I needle each other back and forth. It's for the entertainment of the listener.
Right.
But I don't think I've ever bullied you. I don't think you've ever bullied me. We've never been jerks to each other.
Yeah.
But it's in context of something that's happened, and we're good after it.
Yeah.
But just be better to people. Just be better to people.
I love it. And James, if I can just end on a positive, bittersweet note too,
the world could use it.
Well, I mean, yeah. So the bittersweet part, obviously, Shad Gaspard, former WWE superstar, right? You know, passed away unexpectedly, drowning and trying to save his son in California. But here's the, you know, John Cena, man. I mean, it looks like he's the guy that, you know, put over the GoFundMe here to pay for Gaspard's funeral. $40,000 donation from John Cena. That's what it looks like, according to TMZ. Yep. Like, I mean, come on, dude. Like, John Cena is, you can bleep this out, Jimmy. Go ahead. John Cena is the man. He is the man. I love this guy. Love him. Not that I didn't love him before, but like the man. If you don't have respect for a guy like that, we need more people in the world like John Cena. And just the fact he's helping out a family to help bury someone and to, oh, like if that didn't.
Think about this, Mike.
Yeah.
You're out on the beach and you and your child get caught up in a wave. Mm-hmm. And the Coast Guard gets to you and you say, nope, my kid's over there.
Yep.
And you have the wherewithal to go and save your child.
Right.
Over you. So the lifeguard saves your child and you get caught up in another wave and you know you're gone, but you hope that your child is safe. Like that's good stuff.
It's freaking awesome, you know? Stuff. That's heroic.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, heroic stuff. And for John Cena to do that, you know, help out Chad Gaspard's family in this, you know, horrible time. Wow. It don't get better than that. Yep. So, yeah, there you go. Boom. Tough week for pro wrestling. And the anniversary of Owen Hart, too. Oh, God.
It's been a tough year.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been a tough year.
We're turning the corner.
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on. Let's turn it, baby.
They keep telling me it's going to get better. And
well, it will. It will.
Hopefully.
We're going to get through it.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike Riley will convene next week. I think we have an In Your House. We have an NXT In Your House or something. We'll come up with something. And it'll be fun. Because wrestling's supposed to be fun. So yes. We'll talk to you all next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.